I actually won my first trading competition like back in the sixth grade.
I could see how that would be cool. You're kind of like predicting the future.
The best traders are generally right about 30% of the time.
But what really stood out to me was you will not lose money if you just properly manage your bankroll.
Human beings aren't built to think about odds. You have to learn that through practice.
We're more motivated away from pain than we are towards pleasure.
The point of being in a community is not to get the secrets. It's to get people who are going to help you act on them in a constructive way. I'm looking at this and I'm seeing that what you're doing isn't working anymore. You just told me that. Invest in yourself and go learn a little bit. Don't just rely on bro science. There's evidence-based stuff out there.
Welcome to the Leverage Podcast, where we give you men's dating advice that doesn't suck. I'm your host, Robbie Kramer, a personal growth junkie and dating coach for over 15 years. Tune in each week to learn the latest and greatest strategies to get more dates, make yourself more attractive and confident with the opposite sex in order to meet your perfect 10, and design a lifestyle that makes all your buddies jealous. If you're a regular listener and digging our content, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, or wherever you listen or watch this. But if you don't feel like it's worthy of 5 stars, just go ahead, don't leave any review at all. That'd be great. If you're new to the show, I recommend you download our free dating protocol. It'll help you optimize your first dates, second dates, third dates, have more fun, and get the results you want. I like to connect with my listeners personally, so if you want to grab that download and just say hi, send me a DM on Instagram. My handle is Robbie_Kramer. That's RobbieKramer. Before we dive into this week's content, I want to let you guys know we've opened up a few spots in our exclusive mastermind program called the Leverage Group. We're accepting applications if you want to join our select group of men and experience a radical power of accountability, stop procrastinating on your goals, cross everything off your sexual bucket list, and become a beast who gets more stuff done. To learn more and apply, go to innerconfidence.com/leverage. So let's dive into the content. Yo, yo, we're back with Max Chiz, who is a professional trading coach. He is the owner of tradewithmax.com. Did I say that right?
It's trading-max.com.
Trading-max.com. I love it because it's like you're trading to the max, but you're also max. So I found that to be quite punny.
But yeah.
We met through a mutual friend. We were supposed to hang out in Vegas a few weeks, maybe like a month actually or so back, but didn't get the opportunity. But we did get to connect and talk about your expertise. And I thought it'd be awesome to bring you on. I know a lot of guys that are always interested in trading. Something that I really never tried, mostly just because I knew I'd lose my ass. But I'm really interested in, what you're about to share with us. So kind of tell us your story. How'd you, well, first, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, glad to be on it. I really enjoyed taking a look at some of the old episodes. It's great content.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it. We also had a guy on that I just interviewed, Eric, who we were talking about offline, how this could be a good sort of piggyback. So for anyone who's listened to that, there may be some crossover to this episode, it sounds like. So,
yeah, I'm not going to bother repeating any of the stellar advice he gave. Like, people should just listen to that episode. We don't need to repeat.
Cool. So yeah, tell us how you became a professional trading coach. How'd you get into trading? Give us your story.
So I have been trading as long as I can remember. I actually won my first trading competition like back in the sixth grade. So, and I learned from my dad, who learned from my granddad, who was like one of the first people to have a brokerage account in the state of Mississippi. So, kind of grew up in it, grew up in business, learned how to do it, stayed interested in it through college, ended up getting an MBA and started trading on my own account. And then once you kind of get a reputation for being good at a certain thing, like people start asking for advice and input. And eventually that became the thing, because I just have more fun like talking to people and like figuring out their trading situation and helping them improve their edge than just, you know, waking up and sitting in front of my computer and running some numbers and doing this stuff. That eventually gets old.
So you were in what, sixth grade when you won that competition?
Oh yeah, the state of Mississippi high school trading competition, and we took out a completely over the top aggressive short sale on a couple of stocks because you only have like a limited window to make a certain amount of money. So in a competition, unlike in real life where you're worried about losing, it's paper money. So you just dial it up to the max, and either you win or you don't. So second place or last place doesn't matter.
Right. So you got to go all out, I guess. I remember doing something similar. I think it was also in high school where it was like a competition in our economics class, and we all picked some companies, but I was mostly, you know, chatting with girls or trying to avoid paying attention at that point. But so tell us, like, for the guys listening to this, so first, who do you think would be interested in this sort of content?
So like, you're at the time of filming the podcast that was just up, he said the same thing I'm going to say, which is that the first thing you need to do is to get that first $300,000. Like, trading is one of these things where the more money you have, the same amount of work is going to produce bigger results. So if you have $10,000, even if you're getting 100% returns a year, that's not going to have a material impact on your life. Get that first $300,000. And at that point, the standard, you know, put money in an index fund, et cetera, keep 6 months on hand. That's where you're going to start having opportunities to add a little value, if it's tax loss harvesting or skewing the indexes a little bit. And then, you know, figure out what you want to do and the extent of the work you want to put in and what's going to add the most value along the way. What got me into helping retail traders instead of just like commercial guys who already had family offices, is I looked around, and for people at that point of, you know, I've kind of got my core finances settled and now I want to dig in and understand how markets work so I can optimize that portion, a lot of the products are just not good. And for someone who didn't like grow up doing it, didn't work in the industry, it's real difficult to figure out, like, am I being told the truth? Does this person know what they're doing? So we wanted to create sort of an on-ramp to get people who didn't grow up with a background in this to the point where they can think for themselves and make their own decisions.
Got it. So for someone listening, if they've got like 300K to play with, then that's who you would recommend, like,
yeah,
these sort of strategies to?
If you're not at that point yet, like, the way I'm arriving at that 300K is I'm thinking you're probably going to want to start trading with somewhere between 30 and 50K sort of active, and the rest would be in index funds. And then as you get good, you would increase that. So that's kind of how I'm arriving at that number, because like I said, below that point, not enough multiplier. If you are behind that point, you can still hit me up on the website. I have free availability for office hours. If you get in, we can talk about what's the fastest way to get you there. A lot of people don't have their life sort of set up to, you know, be constantly putting money into an account to reach that point. And that's the main hurdle. Once you get into the habit, you can just start compounding like crazy.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, tell us more about your approach and your system, and like this kind of like, you know, anything that kind of like got you into it, I guess.
What I enjoy most is the game of learning and figuring out and playing with the numbers and trying to understand like why things work. It's fun. And I think in order to be good at anything, you have to ultimately be having fun doing it. And so that's why I'm into it. And I like helping other people sort of get that spark where it clicks and now you see the matrix. But my approach is a little different. If you look at a lot of the courses online, they fall into a couple of buckets. The way I look at it is it's sort of the 80-20 rule. If you just go out and open a trading account, statistically speaking, you're going to lose 90% of your money in about 90 days. So goal number one is to make that not happen. In order to make money, you have to stay in the game. And what we want to do is sort of systematically eliminate all of the things that tend to go wrong during that first period and then give you an on-ramp so that you can learn all of the rest of the stuff. But I'm laser focused on fixing the big problems that derail people before they even have a chance to get good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what tell me, because I'm totally green to this, to everything about this. So probably the people listening are going to, maybe they're going to think that these are stupid questions, but hopefully not. So like, why would some, so let's say I've got 300K and I'm like, all right, what should I do? Should I learn to trade? Should I put my money in a fund? You know, what are the sort of like questions that I would want to ask myself on how to best sort of deploy that capital?
Ultimately, the question is going to be what's going to get you the highest rate of return for the best, you know, money at risk.
Right.
Some people work in jobs like, you know, if you work at a big consulting company and you're trying to get a client at a corporation, like it's like a social expectation that you know how to trade. So at that point, it's just a business write off. But let's assume we're talking about you want to make money. Then, you know, your options are, because you want to scale, you can, you know, create a business, you can buy a business, or you can scale in the markets by investing in businesses that already exist.
Right.
And it's going to be a question of what interests you more and where do you have a competitive advantage? If you're the kind of person who is, you know, good with probability, likes reading the news, is going to want to, you know, put in a couple hours a week to do this, that's great. If you're going to be absolutely miserable learning about companies and keeping track of interest rates, probably find a line of work where that's not the thing.
That's definitely me. Like my investment approach is make money from my business, and then put whatever else I make into real estate. And that short term, you know, vacation rental real estate is sort of my niche. And, you know, I've gotten pretty good at being like an Airbnb host and sort of driving semi-passive incomes, definitely not passive, but semi-passive income from that. But obviously that's just one way to do it. And that's kind of like, I feel, yeah, it's not any better than any other way. It's just the way that I kind of learned, right? And for me, like following companies and reading the news, like I couldn't really care less about that. So I would probably be a bad fit to be a trader, I'm guessing.
I mean, probably. It's really gratifying when you like analyze a company like Hasbro and you're like, yeah, the management there is like headed to a screw up, and then they do screw up and you're like, yes.
Yeah, I can see how that. I can see how that would be cool. You're kind of like predicting the future.
But, you know, a lot of people don't know when they hit that 300K, like what's the next step. And that's a conversation I'm happy to have with people. Like, you know, probably about half the people who do actively trade have no business actively trading. And there's probably a good portion of people who don't, who could be making a lot more money than they're currently making with their investments if they, you know, took a couple weekends and learned a little bit. They would, you know, be, you know, getting 2 or 3% more a year, which is like 5 years earlier retirement, probably.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. Yeah, so tell me more about what goes into like becoming a better trader. I'm guessing it's kind of like getting good at any sort of skill. I'm going to find a mentor, have a proven sort of system, practice, get feedback. Is trading similar?
Same thing. I mean, and it's just like any other business. You know, you have to learn how the business works. You have to create a competitive advantage. A lot of people will say, oh, if you know how to trade, you have like an edge is something that exists in your life. So figure out what your competitive advantage on the market is, and then learn how to use the financial markets in order to construct trades that are going to be profitable. Because ultimately what is happening is you're getting paid to take a risk, and you want to be in a financial position and in a life position where you can better bear that risk than other people, and therefore you can do it at a better price. And that price, that's your profit.
Got it.
In the grand scheme of things, that's what it boils down to. And whether that's being really good at analyzing companies, being good at, you know, valuing real estate, being good at, you know, forecasting the commodity market, however that is, And my advice to people is always like, explore the opportunities, see what clicks, and then make a decision. Don't be like, oh, I saw this thing on Instagram and now I'm going to go trade options. You don't know if options are what you're going to be interested in. Try it out. And the way I tend to teach people is I focus, I have an athletic background, so I focus on fundamentals. Like, you know, what are the core skills? Let's break it down.
I'll brag about you since you're probably too modest, but you're like a very highly ranked professional or Olympic competitor in fencing. Is that right?
I've competed internationally, but yeah, mm-hmm. I go to the national championships for competitive fencing. One of my former training partners this past weekend won the gold medal at the Grand Prix in Doha, first of the season. So yeah, I have a problem, to be honest. I can either not do something or I can go all out. So
it's a good problem. I'm kind of the same way. a very addictive personality. People have told me I possess, I guess. So sorry to cut you off there, but you were saying before I sidetracked you from the fencing.
So I try to focus on like the fundamental skills, and then we focus on integrating them. So like we've got a video up on our YouTube, probably needs to be re-edited, but the gist is there's a couple things that once you understand, you'll be better off as a trader. So a lot of people think that like if I do the trade right, I'm going to make money. It's like I made all the predictions right. I did my forecast correct. And now I'm going to make money for sure. That's not how it works. Like if you're doing trading on a regular basis, like 1% of your effort is, you know, finding the profitable trade. And then, you know, the next 9% is going to be managing costs and dealing with the administrative stuff of getting the order executed and getting a good fill. And then the next 90% is going to be risk management. And I know people who have made perfect predictions. Like their predictions were totally right, and they still lost millions of dollars because the risk management was a little off. It's always possible, no matter how good a trade or a business investment is, to take the risk in such a way that you're guaranteed to lose. Even if you're 100% right on what's going to happen, the numbers work out that you're going to lose money anyway. So first step is like understanding how risk management works, how to allocate capital efficiently. And, you know, next step is how do I design a trade? Let's say I know for sure that, you know, oil inventory is going to fill up and that's going to crash the price of oil, which you'll remember like at the beginning of COVID that actually happened. A lot of people were like, oh, I'm going to try to short an oil ETF. There are reasons that doesn't work.
Oh, let's back up. You said, do you remember when that happened with oil with COVID? And then I was saying, yeah, when it was worth like negative $50 a barrel or something.
Funny thing about that, the media reported that it was negative, and then at the end of the day, when it was not negative, they didn't say, oh, by the way, it closed positive, because no sane person is gonna like pay you money to take oil.
Right.
But I mean, there was a whole run up for months. And if you look at the Commitment of Traders report, which the government puts out, it shows what everybody's position was. It's like everybody in the world who was legally allowed to be short oil was short oil, because we knew the inventory was going to be full and then it was going to be chaos. But even knowing that, like, let's say you shorted oil futures, you made like 50%. But if you did a calendar spread, which is what a professional would have done, it's what I and some of my friends did, then you were looking at like 1,000% returns for the capital you put at risk. So same trade idea. We know oil is going to go down, but different method of execution, dramatically different results.
Wow. Can you explain that a little bit? And maybe the details might go over my head, but so it's shorting it versus what you were talking about, which is what did you call it? A spread or?
Right. So oil trades by the month. Like you're not buying barrels of oil and they're showing up at your house. What you're doing is when you trade an oil future, you're essentially getting one part of a contract. Either you're agreeing to buy the oil or agreeing to sell the oil at some date for some price. So if, you know, I sell June oil. Now I've agreed to purchase oil in June at a price, and then I go buy December oil. Now I'm only exposed to the price differential between June and December. Theoretically, if I own storage, I could just buy the June oil, stuff it in the ground, sell it back in December, and lock in whatever that price differential was. So if I think storage is going to run out, and therefore storage expenses are, you know, going to get crazy, then I don't really have an opinion on like what's going to happen to like the price of oil in general. I just know that like March, April, May, June are about to crash relative to December. So the efficient thing is sell oil now, buy it back later. And then once pandemonium breaks loose, you unwind the trade on the other way, because the people who are storing the oil want to take that other trade to lock in their profit.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense when you're actually talking about keeping it and storing it and right. What's going to happen with storage space.
And this is kind of what I go into when I work with people, is trying to think about it not in terms of lines on a page or, you know, random numbers. It's not a casino. Like, there are human beings on the other side running a business. They want to be profitable. And you can understand what they're going to do.
Right. It seems like there's a lot of psychology involved, and a lot of forecasting on like what people will be like, what sort of trends are going to happen, or what kind of people are going to be interested in. I'm trying to think of like some examples from the past, because my buddy used to do a lot of trading, and he was an amazing predictor of human behavior and what would happen. And like the worst trader ever, because he never executed on any of the things he said would happen. But they all happened. He just never bet on them. And then the stuff he bet on never happened. So I'm guessing that happens a lot. But
the best traders are generally right about 30% of the time. If you're on a hot streak, it's probably 40%. So wow. Let's just say you're right a third of the time. That means, in order to sort of break even, you would need to make twice as much money on the winning trades as the losing trades. So you try to design the way you're putting in the orders and look for situations where that's going to work out. And then you multiply that by, say, a portfolio of 30 positions. You'll lose a few, you win some. The winners more than make up for the losers. I bought Apple some years ago. It did really well. Did a lot better than I was expecting, and now we're having to unwind that position. It's like, it's possible to end up with a position that's just too big.
Sounds like a good problem to have, right?
Look, we always want people to end up with bigger, better problems.
Yeah.
So
if the best trader is only right 30% of the time, why can't a monkey picking random beat that at 50%?
Well, there's a famous exercise that I think Charles Kirkpatrick used to use it in his class, where he has the students flip a coin at the beginning of the semester, and they're each assigned a stock at random. They flip the coin, and then they're going to go long or short. The trick is that what he gives them is some risk management parameters of, when to put in a stop loss order and when to change the direction from that random starting point where they had no forecast. And by the end of the semester, the overall portfolio does well. It does well because they managed their risk well, because they executed their trades well.
Hmm.
And there were enough good ideas in there that everything worked out. So like I said, having the forecast, that's like 1% of the skill. And you only need to be able to predict something on the order of like 1% of the movement in any given instrument. So, if oil moves, a dollar, and my prediction accounts for, 1 cent of that every day, you can make $10 million off of that easy. The trick is just being efficient at capturing that tiny little edge that you have. Because like the high frequency funds you hear about, they're doing hundreds of millions of dollars in transactions, but it's like, a 50.001% chance that they're going to make a penny, and the rest of the time they lose a penny. but they multiply that by so much capital that they still make money.
Gotcha. It sounds a little bit to me, I'm a former semi-professional poker player, and it sounds a bit like bankroll management.
It's exactly like bankroll management.
Okay.
There are a couple people, clients, I've like referred to bookies and been like, just follow this guy for a week and watch how he makes his book, and that will fix this misunderstanding that you're having. I don't think I've told anyone to go take poker lessons yet, but it's the same idea.
That was my trick to, you know, when I say semi-professional poker player, I made about 50 grand as like a senior at university. You know, this is back in like 2006. And I made more money in that, like, you know, 6 months while being a student than I would have at any job. And I really should have continued in poker instead of getting a job in finance, which turned out to be a disaster. But what I was doing, like, I wasn't an exceptionally good poker player. I read a couple books on like winning low limit online, you know, Texas Hold'em. But what really stood out to me was you will not lose money if you just properly manage your bankroll. You know, if you don't play above the limits that your bankroll allows you to play, you'll be fine. So I started with $200 and I played 50 cent dollar tables because that was 200 big bets, you know, with my $200. And then once I turned that into another 200 big bets, I moved up stakes. So then I went up to 1-2 once I had 400. And then I just kept sort of moving up stakes. And because my level of play was slightly better than average, you know, I never was risking my entire bankroll, and I just kept making money, and it just sort of, you know, got bigger and bigger as the stakes I was playing got bigger and bigger. Like you said, you have 300K. Well, now you're going to be able to do some damage with trading. Whereas if you're just trading 50 grand, it's probably not going to be able to change much in your life. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah. That's exactly right. And it's funny you mentioned that, because that's the exact attitude you have to have as a trader. After you win, then you bet on yourself more. You increase the size of the bet, so to speak. After you lose, even if it's just an unlucky streak, you have to dial back the amount that you're putting at risk. Otherwise, you're going to go bust.
Yeah.
And that's probably the number one mistake that people make, is they try to like dial up the risk in order to get out of a hole, rather than dialing down the risk and just building back into it. So
that's the thing that takes, what do you call it? Like, that's the hard thing, right? Like, because everyone wants to do what, you know, Matt Damon did in Rounders, which is bet their bankroll or their life roll, you know, and win everything back, right? Or get in this situation, you know, you kind of, once you're losing, you kind of go into this like, fuck it, let's just bet everything to make back what I've lost. And that's when you get in trouble. I see poker players go broke all the time by getting into a hole and trying to dig themselves out of the hole by playing bigger stakes. And then all of a sudden the money's gone. Cause like, you can't control a run of bad luck. It's just, it happens to everyone. And when you're winning, it doesn't feel like good luck. It just feels like you're good. But when you're losing, right, it's like, oh, I'm have horrible luck, and, you know, I'm a good player, so this should turn around. But then when you're losing, you're also not playing optimally. So your play goes down and you have a bad luck, and it's just compound. So that also happens in trading. Yes.
Yeah, it happens in trading. And a lot of people don't understand. It's like basic human psychology. I don't mean like emotional psychology. I mean just like the way human minds work when it comes to thinking about probability. Uh-huh. If you're thinking about it from a perspective of loss, your like subjective interpretation of that probability will be different than if you're thinking about it from a position of gain.
Right.
And that asymmetry, if you don't correct for it, and I always tell people, when you start out, just do the probability calculations. I know it sounds stupid. I know it feels like grade school, but we know from countless studies that, you know, people, once they start losing, their risk tolerance starts increasing, and their sense of danger starts to go away.
Mm.
And that's the dangerous feedback loop that you want to stay out of.
Yeah, there's something addicting about it. Well, there's two things I feel like. So one is the carrots versus sticks. I'm not sure if that plays in, which is like, we're more motivated away from pain than we are towards pleasure.
Loss aversion.
Right. Does that have anything to do with what you said, or I'm...
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's the principle of loss aversion, but applied to how people understand probability.
So got it.
That there have been studies. There's a book, Thinking Fast and Slow, and I think in one of the chapters, they actually talk about the research that you're talking about with loss aversion, and then how they extended that research into probabilistic thinking in terms of traders and poker players and corporate managers. And
yeah,
human beings aren't built to think about odds. You have to learn that through practice.
That's why Vegas is Vegas, I guess, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, I learned that a stick is a lot better way to motivate people than a carrot, you know, I applied that to a bunch of different areas of my life. Like, that's how I was able to lose a bunch of weight, because for many, many years I was, you know, I was overweight and I couldn't lose weight because that motivation would just quickly fade away. But when I made a weight loss bet where my risk of ruin was high enough, it was easy to stick to the bet. You know, I escrowed $5,000 with a friend. I couldn't afford to lose 5,000. So, you know, it was easy. Or like approaching women, for example, when I had anxiety to do that, I would just give my wingman, you know, all the money in my wallet. And I said, don't give this back to me until I talk to five girls. And
that's great. I love it.
So I feel like that, I mean, just understanding that is super beneficial. But the other thing that you talked about, that's a little bit different, and I'm brain farting for a second, but that wasn't risk aversion. What was that?
You're talking when people are in the state of loss, they become more accepting of risk.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What's going on there? Like what's up with that sort of psychology? Like, I'm down. Let's just like, it's just like, let's just burn it all, you know, like burn it to the ground sort of mentality. I fall into that a lot.
I mean, it's natural instinct, right? Cause like back in the day, like if you were, you know, a hunter gatherer and you needed a certain amount of protein and you had crappy luck for however many days it was, and the choice is like bet it all or starve anyway, like it's totally rational to go bet it all and take a big crazy risk, and either you succeed and now you're back to even, or you fail and you're dead anyway. Like that's your mind trying to do the right thing. Your mind just doesn't understand that like financial trading is a completely different situation than, you know, hunting for sustenance.
Well, that's a, I feel like a good example. Cause also I think it's your mind playing a trick on you that like death is easier because it doesn't understand what that is. It's never experienced that. Right. So right. It just has this idea of what like hitting rock bottom is. And it's like, oh, well, if I hit rock bottom, then I can rebuild. But you've never really probably experienced rock bottom, which would be death in this hunter-gatherer analogy, or just basically having nothing to play the game with anymore when it comes to trading, right?
Right.
To which you're just out, like you can't play, like you're done.
100%. You go bust, that's it.
Right, like until you, you know, make money to build up your bankroll in a different way, like you're screwed, you can't do anything. But it is interesting that there still is that like just totally weird, non-logical drive to just like risk that.
Yeah. And so. I think, you know, a little bit of knowledge goes a long way. So, you know, if people understand, hey, this is a thing that I'm going to experience in this situation. Now I'm experiencing this thing. Maybe I'm in that situation and should instead start making the right adjustments.
Right. Playing less, or you know, managing your bankroll. How did you call it? Portfolio management? Or
I just call it risk management.
Risk management. And
you know, managing the bankroll is part of it. A hedge fund manager spends probably 90% of their day just keeping track of where the cash is and optimizing how it's deployed in order to maintain that bankroll.
Right. So you were saying that you know 1% is kind of actually like looking at the companies. Another 9% is like figuring out what do you think is going up and down. And the other 90% is all bankroll management, risk management, or is there other stuff involved?
I mean, you can get really, really involved. You can also do what some people did in the financial crisis and get so obsessed with it. You have a model that's like detached from reality. I mean, don't do that. But the most famous example of this is like these long short hedge funds that, I mean, if you look on paper, they're like 5 to 10 times leveraged. But if you look at, say, the dollar values that they're long and they're short, on net, they're basically zero. And then if you go in and you look at any individual industry, on net, they're basically zero.
Can you walk me through that? My ability to see that math in my head and understand what's happening is slow.
Maybe with
an example or something.
All right, so you're going to invest in a bunch of different stocks.
Yeah.
But you don't have a strong opinion on like the direction of the market or the direction of any given industry. All you know is I analyzed this company, let's just use Home Depot and Lowe's, famous.
Okay.
And you've decided for whatever reason that Home Depot is going to outperform Lowe's. So you could go buy Home Depot, but you know, the market might crash. The industry, you know, might go through some kind of dramatic change. All that's beyond your control. Your analysis just said Home Depot is going to do better than Lowe's. So
got it.
Assuming, and there's an asterisk here that we're going to ignore the details of, assuming you are able to cost effectively short Lowe's, you could buy Home Depot and then short an offsetting amount of Lowe's. And now you're only exposed to that differential. So you're
gotten hedging. Rid of
all the other risks.
Right.
And now you're doing that. And
so now it's purely a bet, Lowe's versus Home Depot, because you've removed the other factors. Got it.
And even though that might tie up more cash to do that, which you're going to have to manage, how do you get that extra cash? The risk of the position is now lower. So that frees up, you know, risk budget in other areas to take other trades. And so you're trading off the availability of the cash to do the transaction versus, you know, the risk tolerance of any given trade versus how efficient you are. So it's this game of how do I balance these different factors inside of overall, I have to manage my bankroll, but there's just a lot more possibilities of managing it than there are in poker. Because I mean, in poker, especially if it's no limit, it's a little more complicated, but if it's limit, I mean, you're either betting or raising. So now I'm giving you a few thousand ways of doing it. So, and that's what people find overwhelming about the market, but you reduce it down to like 4 or 5 principles and 4 or 5 ways of looking at it and a checklist, and it gets a lot more manageable.
Got it. So yeah, what was to be successful as a trader, what sort of time commitment are you looking at? How much time does it take to sort of learn the skills? What's the investment sort of horizon there to get good?
It, assuming you make it through the first 90 days, you got in with a good group, you have a good trading coach, you survived the 90 days where, you know, 90% of people don't. We're going to ignore that.
Yeah.
From that point, you're looking at on your own statistically about a 3-year runway. And on average, you're looking at about a $50,000 drawdown.
What's the drawdown?
That's the maximum amount of money you're in the red before you start making money. So if I plot your total capital that you're allocating to trading, and you know we go along, there's going to be a $50,000. I'm not used to this camera. $50,000 drop. before it starts going back up.
Okay.
So,
and that's just,
you know, peak to valley,
like because you're learning and you can expect to.
That's the industry average, and people have just looked at portfolios and they've done this study. I think if you have a good coach who has good experience and good training, you can probably cut that learning time in half. You can probably double your odds of success, and you can reduce that loss amount. Especially if you get like with a community of people who are going to like be honest, like the guys around the golf course, like people, it bothers me. I don't have a problem. If you're in an industry where the social expectation is that you trade, I'm happy to optimize. Like this is a business expense. That's totally cool. There's no shame in that. What bothers me is that the people who are doing that don't want to admit to themselves that that's what they're doing. So right. Reality is that's what those guys are doing, is they're taking trades in Tesla or whatever so that they can talk about it on the golf course with their business clients.
Yeah.
You're not going to get good advice there. If you're in a group of people and you've surrounded yourself with the kind of people who are going to make you better. I mean, it's just like with dating. Like if you're around a bunch of people who never approach girls, it's hard to approach girls. If you hang out with people who are constantly thinking about like the market and better ways of executing the trade, and you're talking up your ideas, like you're going to naturally get better. And I mean, that's why all of these people in New York go to these think piece dinners where they all pitch their book. That's why you see major hedge fund people on TV telling you what trades they did yesterday. I mean, it's too late for you to act on it, but they still want to talk up their book because they're going to get feedback and they're going to get ideas that they would have otherwise had.
Got it. It's that mastermind effect, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Being around other people who are in the space doing it, that's, you know, obviously going to get you there a lot faster versus hanging out with the golf guys who are just doing it for vanity and they're not actually invested in like winning at that. They just want to talk about stuff on the course, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And like I say, there's nothing wrong with that. Like there's no negative judgment there. And you know, if that's you and you come to me and you're like, look, I gotta, you know, deal with my clients. How can I do this cost effectively? We can work with that, but you gotta be honest about it.
Gotcha. Yeah. So is that a big part of your training? Just kind of having that community of other guys, where you guys are discussing this stuff.
I mean, I think there's always a lot to be learned by looking at how other people trade. And, you know, I break down famous trading systems. This is, we'll loop back to that. But I try to, you know, use everyone's skills to produce, to get good examples out of people. Because I think that being in a community like that is going to help you get better. But going back to the whole trading system thing, you can go to the public library and if you know where to look, you can get like books that will give you dozens and dozens of trading systems that have worked since the 1960s. Like you don't have to pay me to give you the trading system. Like everybody knows that like momentum trades work. Everybody knows that value investing works. Like we can go down the list. These are not secrets. There are no secrets in trading. The point of being in a community is not to get the secrets. It's to get people who are going to help you act on them in a constructive way.
For sure. Yeah, it's the same with dating, as you mentioned. Like, same with the community I run. It's like, guys can get all the Tinder scripts online. They can dig through whatever. They can listen to podcasts. They may not be able to get it in a very easy to digest format, right? There is some legwork that goes into, like, finding all of that content, but having the content doesn't do anything. It's knowing how to apply it, effectively applying it, getting feedback on how you're applying it. Cause I mean, I'll give a guy a Tinder script. It's literally cut and paste and they'll fuck it up 99 out of 100 times. Cause they'll change the words or they'll send the wrong thing at the wrong time. And I'm like, dude, all you have to do is cut and paste. Like, don't change anything. And literally one out of 100 guys is capable of executing on those instructions. It's, you know, and I'm sure I'd be the same way. It's just my, you know, I just happen to be the person giving that script. But like, it's just human nature to like, oh, well, no, I'm going to tweak this because this is more me, or that's not going to fit for me, or this. And I get all that, right? But without having like those other guys around being like, no, follow this, or, you know, what you're doing makes sense, but it doesn't work in this situation. So your logic's off. So I'm guessing that there's a lot of crossover there.
Yes, it's 100%. I mean, that is a large part of it. I can think of an example. I got called by an acquaintance of mine who he was trading crypto. It's like the last time there was a major crypto downturn. I forget what year that was, but
the downturn that was, I guess, like 2021. Well, it went up to like 70, and then it like crashed down to like 20.
Yeah.
Bitcoin anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the downturn before the current one. And so while it was down at the bottom, it was kind of bouncing around. Bitcoin and Ethereum were in this little range.
Right.
And you know, the thing about trading in a range is, like, if you have good costs, like, you buy at the top, you sell at the bottom, everything's great up until the range stops being a range. and he called me, and I was like, okay, so what have you been doing? And he tells me, and I'm like, so is that working right now? He's like, no, I've lost money every day for the last week. I'm like, okay, do you know why you lost money? He's like, no, I haven't had time to think about it. I keep losing money. I'm like, all right, so take a break. Like, just take a week, close your trades, and, like, come back fresh with fresh eyes. Because I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing that what you're doing isn't working anymore. You just told me that.
Right.
So stop. But, I mean, this sounds simple, but and you'll relate to this maybe more than your viewers. It is an art form getting people to act on information that they already know in a way that will help themselves, especially once they're on tilt.
Oh, like, my God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. When you're on tilt, it's just like every rational, correct decision-making ability goes out the window, right? And it's just pure, like, rage, tilt, gotta get back to even, you know, I'm gonna burn every bridge to do it, sort of thing. And a lot of the time you don't even notice when you're on tilt. I think that's the hard thing. It's like, you're like, oh, I'm not on tilt, but you are, and you can't notice it. And that's right. When you get screwed. You definitely know when you're on, like, life tilt, when you're just, like, steaming, but it's the lead up to that. That's the dangerous part, I think.
Right. And having people who hold you accountable and people who are honest about calling you out on your bullshit and aren't gonna validate you for the sake of validating you that's key. And I think that goes beyond trading into just, like, life in general. Those are the kind of people you want around you.
Right. Yeah, just, like, clear-headed. I mean, I feel like I've lost so much money over the years just being stupid about, you know, bad investments. Just, like, if I would have just, like, either not done 95% of them or just, like, took a very logical, like, asked five people that I thought were smart if I should do these things or not, right? I'd probably be much better off. But, like, we think we're right and we do this, we do that, right? And obviously some of the times I have been right, but I feel like there's just something to be said about surrounding yourself with people who are just, like, can keep you sane, right? And who can just, right, you know, bounce an idea off of or whatnot. But
and a lot of times people show up and they may have a wonderful idea and just have a horrible idea for how to trade it. But once you start bouncing it around the group, you end up with a really, really, really good idea, which ultimately that's what happened with GameStop. I mean, it wasn't a bunch of guys on Reddit. It was like professionals, like, did an analysis and then they discussed it and shared it. And then they took a big trade and they made a fortune.
Yeah.
The initial outset of that was everybody knew the price was fucked. How do we fix it? And in the course of talking with each other, they came up with a great idea together.
Oh, that's interesting. I never realized that. Yeah. Great example. So, anything else vital, you know, that someone who's interested in this needs to know that we didn't talk about?
I think we kind of covered the key points. What I would say is if you're actively trading or if you're thinking about it, invest in yourself and go learn a little bit. Don't just rely on bro science. There's evidence-based stuff out there. Like, start with the evidence. If you disagree with it, then you can do your own thing. But start with evidence-based and you know, hit me up. Like I said, I do free office hours as time is available. I'm happy to talk to anybody. And right now, for your viewers, I'm going to put the introductory course on my site on sale. So in the show notes, there's going to be a link to that. And if anyone wants to, you know, you like what I have said and you want to take the introductory course, sign up. Otherwise, I'm happy to talk to you, either to get a plan to get you to the point where you've got that 300K and you're ready to, you know, put your first 50K at risk, or to deal with whatever trading situation you found yourself in. For better or for worse, most of the people who call me are already pretty deep in the weeds, and that's fine. There's no shame.
Sure. Yeah, man. I appreciate you offering that to the listeners. So, yeah, guys, check out the show notes. It'll all be in there. Hit up Max. He's, there's a lot of people I feel that are out there kind of like talking about trading, and they all, most of them feel a little bit like, eh, I don't know. But I always got a really like genuine vibe from you, and you clearly know what you're talking about. And I've appreciated how you were able to kind of dumb a lot of the stuff, down for me, who really has no background in anything regarding this. And now I understand it a lot more. So it's been awesome, man. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom.
Thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.